The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is...
marvelous.
Great.
And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded with Patrick Bexell. 25, under 25, and the final episode. And we have Anton, the fugitive, still in Croatia though, so I'm not sure how much of a fugitive you are right now.
I'm not. I'm laying low at the moment. I'm staying in my place and just making sure that Interpol can't find me.
It's a good thing that we're recording a couple of days in advance, so they can't listen to the pod and figure out where you are.
Exactly.
And as tradition dictates, for the last two seasons, we've had Marc Dumont on the podcast for the final episode. Our own boss, there's like two people I called boss. Marc is one of them. Now, though, you have a new job and you're with Montreal Hockey Now and the Steve Dangle Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us, Marc, first and foremost.
Thanks for having me on, guys. And by the way, Anton, I'm on the phone with Interpol right now. So I'm getting that sweet reward money. Sorry.
Yeah, and you've seen my face. That's the problem as well.
Exactly. Well, yeah. That's what I tell most women that meet me. You've seen my face. That's the problem. So yeah, it's, by the way, not a good pickup line. I'm just telling you right now. Oh, how's it going, guys?
I've heard worse. So yeah, we're good. It's been a challenge this year, I think. Partly, Anton hasn't been able to join me as much as he normally been able to. And second, we're trying to do the top 10 as individual podcasts as well. So it's been really, really interesting.
But at least there's a lot of good players to talk about, finally. You know, like, the talent's there.
It's also over 50 players for the first time. So it's like, it's a
oh,
lot.
Oh, yeah, you guys are ranking 50? I mean, because also, for those that don't know right now, and they know I used to be the managing editor at Eyes on the Prize, there's someone, I'm actually at Andrew Berkshire's house right now, so he was the managing editor of Eyes on the Prize before me, and he brought me in. And I think our first time we did the T25, U25, we had maybe like 39 people to list, or like 37 or something like that. Now they're up to 50. So that's, yeah. And I mean, it's just that you're getting talent all the way down. I think, like, obviously I'm looking at this list right now, and we'll get into it, but like, it used to be the last 10 guys, maybe they make the AHL. Maybe you're seeing some people that could still stick in the NHL. So that's very interesting. Honestly, I got to say, there's not a ton of like superstar talent, I don't think, in there, but a lot of solid NHL potential, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, there was someone mentioning in the comments today when Juraj Slafkovský was ranked at third. We are recording this on Wednesday evening in Europe and Wednesday afternoon in Montreal. It was saying like, well, we've come a long way since Nathan Beaulieu was ranked third overall.
Yeah, however, and I'm going to be doing a prospect ranking on Montreal Hockey Now, so keep an eye on that. But one year, I remember at one point we had Carey Price, Max Pacioretty, Lars Eller, PK Subban, Brendan Gallagher, and Alex Galchenyuk were all fighting in the top five. So, you know, there was a point where it was pretty exciting. But then, yeah, after that, it got a little murky. I remember fighting with people about Brett Lernout being in the top 25, under 25. Oh,
that was the good old days for me.
Yeah, yeah. And they're like, how dare you? He's going to be so good. And I was like, guys, listen, first of all, I know the guy. And he, like, he scares me. Yeah, he looks like a Viking. Like, but there's nothing there. There's no value there. And when you're looking at the guys on this list, there's value. I think there's actually value. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm pretty far down on the list as well. Like, I mean, even if you're like, there are guys who are not even cracking the top 25 this year who actually seem like they could have genuine potential to play at least professional hockey in North America.
And I'm looking at the list, and I know we can't, are we allowed to divulge it? Anyways, I'll let you guys figure that out. But there's two guys on there that I think should be in the top 10.
And, yeah, I have one that I definitely would rank a lot higher. Obviously, I'm partial, so I can start with that, because I would probably rank Adam Engström quite a lot higher.
Probably me as well.
Now let's be perfectly fair. How many people, like, the first time I saw him was at Dev Camp, right? And he looked great. I think he looked like one of the smarter players. It was clear that he had some high-end experience skating. Very, very good.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, people that are voting on him, they don't know who he is.
No. And neither did I. I'll be honest. No. I think I had him at 37 and he finished 40th.
Okay.
And obviously I've been down to Engelholm, to Rögle, and spoken with him, spoken with the coaches, spoken with the GM, mm-hmm. and got an impression firsthand, see him at practice, as you did in Dev Camp as well. But he also flew a lot under the radar in a very, very strong under 20 team in Djurgården last year.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the Canadians are looking for guys that can, you know, it's not just about quick exits, but quick puck retrieval as well, right? So the way they're actually trying to structure this team is just that it's continuously a fluid motion. And to have that, you have to have guys that can retrieve the puck. I mean, you look at their lineup going into next year, no one can retrieve the puck there. Let's be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of space on the defensive side of things to make an impact. But there's one guy in there that I'm looking at. Again, I'm going to say, well, maybe top 15, but William Trudeau might be the most underrated prospect. Now, the reason I say this is that he's the kind of guy that coaches will like. Okay, he's the kind of guy that doesn't only make the right decision, but he makes very few mistakes. He has a very good ability to get the puck on net, which is very important. He's got fantastic gap control. Like what he does when you're trying to enter the zone is that he forces you to dump it in. Okay, and then we all know scoring chances just crater as soon as you're forced to dump it in. So William Trudeau, I think, should be much, much higher in your overall list. Like I'd say. But I'd say that William Trudeau has a much higher chance to become an NHLer than Caden Primo or Jesse Ylönen.
Well, I mean, if you thought that, maybe you should have made a list, you know, as you know, and we could have just seen. You could have had Trudeau at top 10. No, I was actually, if I'm being perfectly honest, I was going to mention those two. If I were to rank again, I would place both Engström and Trudeau significantly higher. Yeah, because having heard what others have said as well, having read about them and like listening to what Pat have come up with Adam Engström, I remember like when he was drafted, had no real clue who he was. Obviously, coming from Djurgården's under 20 team, and they had a really strong development. You know, this year they had Liam Ögren, Noah Östlund, Jonathan Lekre, Mäki Kallio Delius, four players who potentially could go in the first round. Adam Engström was kind of forgotten. And when he was drafted in the third round, he's kind of like, well, do they really need another left-handed defenseman and all that? Yeah. Trudeau was kind of the same last year, right? Like he was kind of an afterthought. And then when you look at it and when you look what he has put up, and
his numbers are fantastic.
Yeah, I would probably... I mean, I had Arber Zekai very far down as well. I would probably rank him higher as well.
Okay. Oh, yeah. He snuck into the top 25, eh?
Yeah.
Mm.
I would be honest. The two guys
you guys don't see my camera right now, but I'm making some funny faces. Listen, I love the hype around Arber, and I've met him several times. And please don't punch me in the face, Mr. Zekai. But no, absolutely not. He shouldn't be in the top 25. Let's be perfectly honest.
I had him at 36th. So I say, like,
sounds about right.
Yep. I would probably have him at like 28th, 27th or something if I ranked it.
Why? Because he knocked a guy out at Dev Camp?
No. Because he actually had a good year. Like, I mean, he's 20, so he should probably have a good year in the OHL.
Yeah, but... as an overager. But we'll see. But honestly, I just don't know. And here's the thing is that guy's a hard worker. I'll give him that. Mm-hmm. And I know that he wants to succeed. And I know he wants to be known for more than just a dude that puts other people to sleep. But I'm not sure if those skills will translate to the AHL. That's all I'm saying. And it's not me trying to be harsh. I think it's just realistic in this approach because, like, I've been seeing people talk about who are you most excited about, Gouley, Barron, Harris, or Zekai. And it's like, eesh, one of these things is not like the other. Let's be perfectly honest. So there is a chance he develops into a stalwart defender, but I think it would be a long-term plan if that's what's the case there, you know? I can see him being a captain of the AHL team for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, like, it's difficult to see him ever reaching beyond, like, his maximum ceiling would be third-pairing defenseman, and, like, there is no, like, if he really, really ticked all boxes. But it's a great feel-good story, and people like that. So, like,
absolutely.
It kind of adds to the whole Zekai. Like,
and it costs them nothing, right? Like, that's the other part, is your asset acquisition cost was zero.
Yeah.
So, you know, if something happens, something happens. But it's funny because we're looking at another guy right now that's like Michael Pezzetta. We would have said the exact same thing about him, that he's never going to make it. Yeah. Right. And I know
here,
for
yet
a fact,
here he is.
Yeah. And Pezzetta works super hard, and Zekai also works pretty darn hard. So, you know, it's funny for me, you know, if I go full nerd and I say, well, statistically speaking, he should make it. But that's, you know, it's not a math test on the ice. It's a coach. It's a different kind of test. And he passes a lot of the tests that are put forth towards by management and the team. So
we should also point out really that the list was made before the World Juniors, and one person that I also spent some time with this summer, or albeit over Zoom, was Jan Mišak, and he would probably have been ranked a lot higher after the World Juniors than before. I'm still not sure he's going to finish up as a center. I think he will be a winger down the line.
I was talking to him about that, believe it or not, because he intercepted me at Dev Camp, and he was just saying, like, I was asking him, like, how comfortable are you down the middle, and he really wants to stay there, but it's not his choice, right?
No. I think,
but you know who else should be higher? While we're speaking about European prospects, and it's the guy who I actually doubted a little bit because I didn't see anything in his game that really stood out. Monsieur Emil Heinemann. Honestly, well, here's why I'm going to say he's ranking him a little bit higher. Okay, so the skating isn't there, the defensive awareness isn't there, but he has an NHL shot already. Okay?
Yeah, yeah. That's the shot value is great.
And it's already NHL, and he's got the accuracy and the speed too. Yeah. So one of the things Mario Lemieux always said is better to have like a faster, accurate shot than a heavy, heavy, like, you know, wind up shot. So but I will say, I don't know if he's got it, but I would, like, at one point I was writing him off as a nothing burger. I would say Emil Heinemann probably I should have respected him a little bit more. We'll see how it goes this season, I had written him off, I'll be honest. And at Def Camp, I kind of changed my opinion.
No, I think I spoke with his coach, and obviously it's the same coach as that has coached Mathias Norlander and Victor Olofsson, who plays, or Golofsson, as we speak about him in Buffalo.
For some reason I thought it was the Habs Olofsson there that they had drafted a few years ago. Okay.
No, but he's very similar, I think. But both the coach and I think he's very similar to Victor Olofsson. Defensive, very not strong, but the shot, they're the shot. Very different shots, but they're very good. I think he pronounced it like Victor Olofsson's has maybe more.
I think he has a faster
accuracy,
shot there. But
Heinemann can place his shot through a defender.
Okay, I love that he said that, because that's one of the things I picked up on at Def Camp is, okay, if there's no one between him and the goalie, he's picking that corner. But even if there's a defenseman, he still picks an open spot. Yeah. That actually takes, like, whether you're born with it or not, it still takes pretty a lot of brain power to make that happen. So. I just don't, like, I had him, like, ranked as, like, maybe he'll make it to the AHL 1 year, but now, like, if I have to see the people that impressed the most, like, at the prospect tournament, you have Owen Beck, and after him, it was Emil Heinemann.
For me, it's more, I can see him making it into the AHL, no problem, definitely.
Yeah. Is it the skating? I'm not sure if the skating, on that.
You speak about, like, these things that are translatable for a coach.
Yeah.
And they're, like, his coach also said, if you have him in your own end, you haven't coached right.
Mm.
And you know, like, that's,
and I'm not sure if he has the high end talent to compensate for that lack of defensive awareness. But speaking of which, guys that do have a lot of high end talent, I think that didn't look good at camp, at Dev Camp, or at the prospect tournament, is Cédric Guindon. So he's actually he's a French Canadian from Ontario, so Franco Ontario, just like me. And obviously I have a soft spot for him, but for all intents and purposes, Cédric Guindon will skyrocket up the list this year. Now, I at prospect camp, he was like, listen, I'll be perfectly honest. He was playing with guys that don't even make your he was playing with invites there, basically. Mm-hmm. But keep an eye on Cédric Guindon. That might be a really good high value pick for the Montreal Canadiens in terms of return compared to where they got him.
Yeah, we saw fellow EPA and fellow Eyes on the Prize alumni Mitch Brown put out something about Cédric Guindon as well. He's one to look forward to, following.
He might Joshua Wyatt there, you know. That's pretty exciting.
No, but it's fun. It's fun to just look at it. If you look at Heinemann, there were talks that they really wanted him in that deal from Calgary, the Florida deal, because he's
Calgary. Yeah, Calgary was the first, and Emil Heinemann, and Sherratt went to Florida for the first and Tyce Melanick. Yeah.
So I think that basically Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton were thinking about, like, well, the Habs have been lacking, power play goals, threats for years.
Goals.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, like, I mean, if you
that's
can
exactly
just
what they in... said when they acquired him, like, where we want guys that can score goals. Because, listen, you guys all know I'm a big proponent for data analysis, and I love the idea of putting more shots on net, but eventually they got to go in. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's funny when people are like, oh, well, he scored 30 goals, but he shouldn't have. But he did, though. Did he? Like, did he? Like, yeah, but the numbers say he shouldn't have. Yeah, but he did. And then he did it again. So there is value there. Even if predictive analysis doesn't tell you, goals are still very important.
Yeah. Indeed, they are. I mean, for me, I think you mentioned the two ones I would probably move down, Mark, and that's probably Kaden Primo and Jesse Ylönen.
I like Ylönen's game, though. I really like Ylönen's game, and once in a while he's got. And speaking of NHL shots,
that one-timer is
sexy, man. That is some sexy one-timer action. I just don't know if he's
has
got
he stagnated.
Well, I'd like to see a full season under, like, obviously Bouchard and Jean-François Aouel, there was a big change there. I wouldn't say he stagnated as much as maybe in this sense. Last year, the Laval Rocket were really using hired guns, mercenaries, let's be pretty, like guys like Danick Martel and what's the name of that dummy there? The dummy that said, if you have more Quebecers, you'd be good there. I forget his name. Anyways. Pardon me? Oh, yeah, GSD, whatever. What a dummy. Anyways, and, you know, they had guys like Xavier Ouellette, and they had a lot of, like, overagers, let's be perfectly honest, and it's good. Like, they went far with them, but you don't want your HL team to be full of 30-year-olds, right? So you want to give space for guys like Jesse Ylönen to actually do it. So I'm expecting to see a significant uptick in ice time this year, and then we'll see how we'll be able to react to that. However, there's going to be a lot of competition in Laval, too. Like, it's not just Montreal. Like, Montreal right now, I'm looking at it. I don't see a spot for Slafkovský in Montreal.
No. Until the deadline. That is.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It's funny. On the way, me and Andrew are going to get some, there's some free advertising, some momesos. And we were talking about it. I'm saying, I actually see Slafkovský 2 years out. And I know people lose their minds, but the cool part is, I don't think Hughes or Gordon gives a flying frig or flying fiddlesticks about what other people say. And it wouldn't surprise me if they, but again, all this to say, Laval will be pretty tight too.
Yeah.
So what I'm afraid for him is he kind of falls into what happened to Lucas Vedemo in the sense that they kind of, Bouchard kind of pigeonholed him as like a defensive player. And let's be honest, that was never really his big thing. Mm. And then he kind of got obsessed with that and lost his offensive capability. But we saw last year, he was still getting good power play minutes. And I think he has one of the best shots in the league. So that being said, what you did mention earlier, at one point you have to see them take off, right? Like, how old is he now? Is he 23?
Yeah, I think so.
He should be. Yeah, he's born 99. So
let's be perfectly honest. These are his prime years. So like it's got to happen. So I'd probably drop him. And listen, I don't know what we've seen out of Kaden Primo that tells you that he's NHL worthy. I don't want to be mean. And again, I know these guys. So this is a little bit weird. Mm-hmm. So I get a few texts saying like F you, Mark, which is normal. I get that all the time. I think Kaden Primo was rushed out of and that was a Marc-Pierre Jamais issue, was rushed out of Northeastern. He's the only goalie in the history of the NCAA to sign at 19, okay? He was promised the moon. He didn't get it, got upset about that, which I get it, because he got told things were going to happen. I'm not going to spill all the details, but... and since then, he hasn't had, like, if you... I actually didn't look at his numbers this year, but I assume they're pedestrian. He hasn't had anything that indicates that he's NHL ready. He's big. His lateral transitions, not great. His reaction, not great. I would say, like, I look at... there's a reason I think the Habs went out and picked, like, Verbeek and Dobesh.
I'm just going to say about him that he had a 909 save percentage during 33 regular season games, but he was really good in the playoffs, 936 in 14 games.
Which is what made me laugh when GSD is like, we should have more Quebecers on our team. Like, buddy, an American just saved your ass there. You know, like, shut up.
Well, he has a French name.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. And at the same time, it was like Ylönen was scoring goals and Primo was saying, yeah, exactly. But I think there's a good reason why they went to get those three gigantic goalies there.
And one who has a breakout season. And it's actually, and he's asked me to continue calling him Dishaw.
Is that it?
In
okay.
English. No, because no, it's good. Actually, if in Danish, it's Dick Off.
Dick Off?
Yeah, that's not very
amazing.
Good.
Oh, my God.
That's a whole touch my sack story once again. Yeah. Like, it's not good.
So he's asked me to...
So you don't want to put him inside Tuck, because then you Tuck Dick Off.
Yeah.
Tuck my sack Dick Off? Okay. Yeah. I always wanted to make it sound like 90s rap, like, the cow. Anyways, I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but I have had a chance to talk to Dobesh, and I love his attitude. Like, he's got that, like, hungry, you know, he's got that dog in him there. Yeah. He's really exciting. So anyways, I think there's a reason why to get, before we get, you know, we'll have to get to our number one guy pretty soon, but
yeah,
I think there's a reason the Habs went and picked up three goalies, like, back to back to back. And it's smart. You're not using Verbeek was in the OHL, but these guys have time now. Like in Europe and NCAA, you have a longer time frame, and you go with a seventh round pick. Perfect. That's what.
But I was just gonna say, like, I mean, basically, with young goalies, you're gonna just throw assets at them, right? But just hoping that one will stick in the end, because like you've kind of realized that Caden Primo won't be a new Carey Price, regardless.
I mean, listen, he's still pretty young from a goalie's perspective. But
sure. But the question is just like, can he eventually become like a 1B or a solid backup or something? Okay, but you still need
like
more.
A Jake Allen of sorts. But yeah, you need someone to come back in. Yeah.
Yeah. And you need like, I mean, if you have 11, 12 draft picks, why not throw one per draft on a goalie and just see how
just
it works?
I was just speaking to, here's where I'm going to start dropping names there. No, my friend that works for an NHL organization, but he was saying like, the arrows. Rag. Yeah, you know, like
did he win a Stanley Cup this year?
No, actually, I was speaking to Eric pretty recently. He was actually pretty excited because I'm going to be doing the podcast with Andrew, and we used to all work together. And he was saying like, just this is actually like a couple years ago, and he was saying just the idea of spending a high draft, like even if it's a really good goalie, he's going to go the first round, and even then, he's like statistically speaking, terrible to pick a goalie in the first round. Like, I mean. You have a Rangers guy that made it and a Habs guy that made it. That's about it, right? Most other first rounders are.
And Askarov is not going to pan out, I think.
Well, and the difference between a really good goalie in the first round and a pretty good goalie in the seventh round is very minimal. Like, there's actually.
Once in a blue moon, you get a Vasilevsky, but you also get a Jack Campbell who doesn't break through until he's 28. And it's just was it then worth it?
That panic run where guys start getting goalies, it's kind of like when the D's come off the board, you know, and then the guys start picking them. But to go back to it, I remember at one point when the Habs picked some guy called Carey Price, they had Mathieu Garon, Cristobal Huet, they had just grabbed Halak too. Théodore, I believe?
Yeah. He was still there, right? Yeah.
They had like their, and at one point, like Garon and all them, they were considered like pretty darn good too. So, it wasn't feasible, but anyways, so like the Habs were at their strongest point there too, and they went and they got a goalie so it worked out. So it's never enough, right? That's the thing, it's never enough, and it's always good. Basically, they're hoping that one of these three guys pans out, but in my opinion, like I would drop Primo down to like the mid to above like 15 to 20, maybe even a little bit lower if I'm being perfectly honest.
I was just going to say, like, for every Carey Price at fifth overall, you get an Al Montoya at sixth overall. So
I was going to say, wasn't it DiPietro that was taken first?
DiPietro, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's still getting paid $15 million a year.
Good for him.
I love it. Yeah.
It's just like you, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. Just like me. Yeah, we're making lots of money, and both our knees are shot. Exactly.
Well, yeah, we know who's paying for the in next time we're in Montreal, right?
Nick Suzuki actually still owes me one, and so does Alex Belzil. And I don't care. I'm collecting. I don't care. It doesn't matter that I don't work for the Canadiens anymore. I am correcting. Now, one thing I'm going to look all this is that I don't know if Kirby Doc, like, I know he's established and whatnot, but I don't know if I see the potential in there. And I, like, it's pretty, to me, fifth. I would look at a guy like Sean Farrell with a lot more potential than a guy like Kirby Doc, because I know that the age difference isn't that significant, but I love the fact that they overcooked Farrell in the sense that they, you know, gave him all the time he wants. So,
but Kirby Doc is bigger. And as we've heard and read a lot of the times in the comments, bigger is always better.
Always better. That's why, statistically speaking, the second you go over 6'3", there's like a 99.9% chance you will fail in the NHL. But you know what's always funny about that? People are like, oh, how many small guys have made it? Like, a lot more than big guys. This idea, like Slafkovský, if he makes it at his height, is like a unicorn. There, think of this right now, and I think we talked about the D last time, but forwards over 6'4" that were good in the NHL. Mario Lemieux. End of list. Like, there's guys, like, there's a couple others here and there. Yeah. Like, maybe Jamie Benn might have been 6'3", but he was like a fifth round pick. Not a lot of really tall guys that are good in the NHL. So it's funny that we have a bias against small guys, but statistically speaking, they have a better chance.
Speaking about a small guy, I have to ask Mark, Philip Mesher, was he taken in the first round so Montreal could have controlled the fourth?
A Slovak influence?
Yeah. Controlled maybe because if he's taken in the second round, he has to be
offered up to a European club beforehand. I don't think so. I think they actually, that was a surprise pick for me, but like, let's say I will say this.
Well, you're on camera when they picked him, so we know that it was a surprise pick for you.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. And what was crazy about that, we had that video, it was the Habs, and like we took us like 2 days to put it out. Every other, like the NHL Czechoslovakia, or not, well, I'm going way back, NHL Czech put it out, and they got like 150,000 views in a couple seconds there, and the Habs were like, "What? No, that's ours." I'm like, well, then get it out. But anyways, it was a really cool moment. I will say at Dev Camp and at the Prospect Challenge, Meshaw, that how I pronounce it? Well, first of all, he taught me some Slovak words like dobiče, and but he was much better than Slavkovsky. And I think one of the cool things there is that you're trying to use him as a center now. Yeah. I'm not sure if he's got a center in him, but someone is explaining to me, and he might be your prospect guy over at Eisen the Prize, how he actually could be able to generate a little more as a center, not off the wing. So that'll be interesting. But I mean, he has to get stronger. And I've never been one of those guys like you have to be super strong, but he does. Like, he's going to get thrown around there. Kind of like, remember when Victor Mete was a defenseman? Mm. He got tossed around there like a little ragdoll. But his anticipation, fantastic. His edge work is, it's like sex on the ice. Is that good? Yeah, you know what? Like, I'm trying to think. Well, not the first time I did it, but the second. No, okay. And then also, his stick handling is just absolutely fantastic. So I wanted to see him without Slavkovsky. I think that was really important. And he drove the offense in his own line. So out of everyone, he's probably the one whose stock out of that draft, other than Owen Beck, has gone up the highest. Like, Owen Beck and Lane Hudson were obviously great picks, but Meshaw, I was surprised they picked him. I wouldn't have picked Slavkovsky or Meshaw in the first round. I'll be perfectly honest. Mm. I mean, I would have picked Slavkovsky at like five or whatever, but not at one. But so far out of the two, I'd say definitely Philippe Meshaw is showing his mettle. Now it'll be interesting to see if he goes back. From what I heard, he doesn't want to go to Kitchener, and I kind of get it. The guy's been playing pro hockey. Like, yeah. People don't understand that pro hockey is a whole different thing. Like, you know, junior, but it's in Canada. Yeah, I know, but you're not going to tell me that the Rangers are better than a Slovak team. And I'm sure, like you said, Patrick, what is that? Brinas? Sorry, I'm not pronouncing Brinas, that.
Yeah.
Brinas is, I mean, the SHL or sorry, SEL.
SHL.
Oh, sorry. Damn it. Yeah. Back to the Swedish Elite League. It's always going to be the SEL in my mind. It's obviously much higher quality than the OHL, right? So the thing is, what would help him is that they'd force him in the gym. And again, I don't want to be that guy, but he has to get stronger. He just has to get stronger. It's as simple as that. Now, I saw him walk away with his shirt off. Like, he's cut, but little guy there, you know? So he's got to get that core strength up because he's going to get tossed around.
I also know that Regler was interested, which would have been brilliant with two Habs prospect in the same team. But
it'd been great for you, yeah.
Yeah, and it's obviously just an hour to drive, or an hour and a half when I keep the speed limit.
There you go, which you always do. But, you know, the cool part here is that we're talking about guys that, you know, that are way out. Like Brett Stapley, he really dropped. He actually looked pretty darn good in there at camp. But anyways, there's a good amount of these guys out of the 25 that have any
trouble. I think the biggest reason why Stapley was dropped as well was because he was out of an NCAA contract and he wasn't.
And he didn't. Did he have his AHL yet?
No, he didn't. When the list was, so we were just expecting that he was going to go on an AHL tryout somewhere, not in the Habs, you know. Then he came back.
He's kind of following the same route as Raphaël Harvey-Pinard. Yeah. They're signing with the Laval Rocket, but I mean, he had a bit of a slow start at prospect camp, but his defensive play was fantastic. And what's more, I think it really impressed Jean-François Houle in the sense that he was turning his defensive work, which he was covering for these overeager defensemen, into offense, which is actually what we saw Owen Beck do a lot. So coaches fall in love with that kind of stuff. And you know, whether they deserve it or not, they're going to get chances because of it.
Well, we're going to keep going, and we're going to keep going all the way up to number one. We hinted on it. And it's obviously the new
Sprague captain. Robinson. Sprague Robinson is our.
I heard that he has retired and is working at a border crossing between Ukraine and Poland, serving up hot meals now. And
Well, then that's okay because
in a good way.
Okay, good, because
he's assisting another way.
He's a bit of a dick, if I'm being perfectly honest. Me and him don't talk. No. Sprague Robinson is, I mean, I don't want to get into it. I'll get really angry, but F that guy.
Well, we're going to talk about
the horse captain. He rode in on. Yeah, go ahead.
We're going to talk about the new captain, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I would assume you sort of expected it. But Nick Suzuki is number
one.
I'll
be honest. I was essentially part of his campaign to make him captain there. You know, if we're being perfectly honest, I don't know if you guys saw me this summer, but you know, I was following him around at like youth hockey tournaments and just telling him like, man, and it wasn't, I'm not trying to take any credit for this, but I was trying to kind of explain that, if you want to be a legend in Montreal and adored, and no offense to Weber or Pacioretty or any of them, but you have to immerse yourself, go back to what Jean Béliveau did. And I don't want them to be a Jean Béliveau. That's impossible. Jean Béliveau epitomized class and just, I mean, that there was no one like him. Like, he answered every single letter by hand, right? However, this idea of not staying and not talking to the kids, like, you have to do that now. It's really important to kind of embed yourself into the community. And I think it's quite clear this summer that that was part of his game plan there. Mm-hmm. So first time I met his parents in life, I said, like, you know, your son's going to be captain, right? And they're like, we think so. This is about 2 years ago. And it was like, no, man, like, just, he has that disposition that, you know, he's calm, cool, collected, you know, stoic, and he leads on the ice. He's not a big yapper, but he leads on the ice. And I think that's important for the Canadians, especially when they're going to have, I like the idea of having a young captain. I know everyone freaks out about it, but like, that's just people getting angry that old guys like Brad Marsh don't get captains anymore. Don't get captaincy. I think it'll be good for him too, because he's already an old soul, right? To bring in so that way they'll have a captain that they can actually relate to, all these young guys, and that plays well. So, you know, double bonus, as opposed to a guy that's just like this crusty dude that has 1,000 games and you give him the C because he's old.
But it also makes sense because it's a rebuild, right?
You're building, exactly. Kind of like, so by the time, yeah,
sign,
yeah,
him
exactly
up for 8 years, and you're kind of like making sure that this is the guy, yeah, we're going to build around, regardless, yeah, if he's going to be like the, you know, 1C or the 2C in the future. He's going to be part of the team. He's going
to
be,
yeah, well,
you know,
he committed to your team for 8 years. So they're essentially saying, like, you know, yeah, exactly, good to go. And I didn't see it any other way. I know people were talking about Gallagher and Edmondson, but listen, what the whole Edmondson thing, like, you're what? Because he's older and, yeah, and like, yeah, but like, what does any of this have to do with leadership? Like, you know, like, it's kind of like when, and again, I don't want to throw any, but when people are like, Shea Weber was the best leader ever, like, okay, I guess so, but like, I'm not saying he's not, but like, why?
But
tell me,
because he's quiet and he's not saying anything.
He's tall and he's quiet.
Yep. No, I think it was actually because he took Henrik Zetterberg's head and bashed
and smashed
it into
it. Yeah, exactly. So,
no, but I think like people like, I don't know if it was Victor Mete or someone was saying like, oh, you know, Shea Weber took me in like the first season when I was up in the NHL, you know. Him and his wife took me in and invited me to dinner and everything and made me comfortable. So he just, I think he was a great role model, like leading with example. You know, just the fact that he had broken every bone in his body and still made it through the playoffs.
I gotta give him that credit for that.
Exactly.
I mean, listen, like, we can admit this right now. Sorry to interrupt. When Shea Weber came over from Montreal, like, it was a bit of an open secret. His foot was already busted up, man. Yeah. That's one of the main reasons Nashville, as soon as they mentioned Subban, Nashville was like, yep, done. Like, boom. Like, within 2 seconds. Actually, it's Nashville who suggested to trade Weber. So he was broken on his way here. And the fact of the matter is, like, statistically, he should have fallen off a cliff a long time ago. So I got to give it to him. Like, he played well for well longer than I anticipated.
I was also going to say, like, I mean, he's also on the ice. He's basically the example of what we were saying before with Heinemann's shot, that it's better to have, you know, an accurate shot than just a heavy slapper, because it's just, his last few years, it was just like he was firing in every possible way and it just didn't work out. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, as a leader, I understand, you know, why people liked him, as, you know, because he's just, as you were saying, Suzuki is stoic. Shea Weber was also kind of stoic, that personality that everyone can kind of like.
Yeah, but
he'll
just
always,
like,
be there.
Yeah. However, the good, again, like you're saying, going back to the point about him being captaincy in his age, at least these guys can relate to Suzuki, and he's going to be the best player on the ice for another few years. So it's kind of, I don't want to compare it to Crosby because obviously they're not in the same league, but that same idea, your best player on the ice, the guy is going to be the franchise the longest, you know, he's the face of the franchise. He committed long-term and he's got high-end skill. And these are all things that Canadians kind of lacked there for a little while. So yeah, I like it, especially considering how many young players should be coming in soon. Yeah. You know, and yeah, obviously you surround him with Gallagher and Edmondson and whatnot. So that's great. And also it gets him a chance to build a rep with the referees, gets him a little more, you know, a little more comfortable. And yeah, so all in all, I mean, there was no other choice, in my opinion. Like, it was crazy not to. And I hate it. They were even talking about one year, saying maybe we're going to go no captain. I hate that, man. Don't go no captain anymore. Like, just name a guy for a year. You know, the idea of no captain really bothers me. I don't know why, but it feels like it doesn't ever succeed.
I can only say that in regards to Shea Weber, that Mattias Ekholm spoke very highly about him.
He was the most respected player in the league.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean,
but
like,
does that make him a good leader?
No. But the way he showed leadership off the ice, I think he usually had team meetings at his house with the defense group, et cetera.
Yeah. And I don't know much about his time in Nashville either. So once you get that leader tag, it's kind of hard. I don't know if he played that role here. Let's be honest. He didn't want to come to Montreal. He was very happy. He was very happy in Nashville. And he was probably the one that was most upset by all these trades.
I was going to say, he's probably going to be happy in Vegas now.
If he goes,
Of course he won't go.
If he even goes there for one day there just to check it out there. But
I heard he had a vineyard up in, was it Washington or Oregon?
Possibly.
If you have a vineyard there, you're not going to go anywhere else.
No, exactly. No. Why would you? Yeah. Well, it's clear because it was clear. Him and Price just honestly, they'd rather be in the forest hunting or drinking wine. And people are like, oh, I'm like, no, I get it. That's exactly why I want to be doing at all times, hunting, fishing, and, you know, drinking proper beer from Belgium there. Well, no, I'm more of a, I like the bière trappist from Belgium. So, I'm fancy like that.
Yeah. Well, speaking about Nick, though, we've already touched on the subject. He is the captain. He showed progress every year he's been with the Habs.
And he played. I think he's the only guy that played every game last year.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't even consider looking into that, but probably, yeah.
I think he's their current Iron Man.
Yeah. But where can we see him progress? Is that the leadership side or is it on the hockey side as well?
I think if you're looking at Nick Suzuki and where you want him to improve, first of all, you just have to look at 5-on-5 production, right? So it did get significantly, we're going to try that word one more time, significantly better this year compared to the last. However, he's still very dependent on power play goals, which is not the end of the world. Like, listen, a lot of forwards do it, but his skews really heavily to power play. So I think that's one area you want to see is a little more production 5-on-5. I think the key will be finding a line mate. Like, you know, everyone's talking about Suzuki Caulfield. I'm not sure if they're the best together either because every time they tried to throw someone on there, very few people made that a good line. And you have to start to think after they tried 3 or 4 guys, like maybe it's the two other guys that have stayed together. So, I mean, obviously, as Andrew's just saying right now, try Brendan Gallagher. That would probably be perfect. Actually, it's funny because I have an article coming out, you know, Montreal Hockey Now is talking about Gallagher's going to have a good bounce back season and he'd probably be smart enough. His defensive game has gone through the roof, right? So he would work there. But I want to see more 5-on-5 production from him now. If you guys look at the numbers from him under Schaum, he was actually the only one that produced under Schaum too, though. Give him credit. He produced under that system or whatever you want to call it there, that Picasso in the later years of hockey system. And he still did well, but then under Saint-Louis, his numbers just skyrocketed. And coincidentally, his assists per 60 under Martin Saint-Louis was the same as Caulfield's goals per 60. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, it's just a coincidence. Yep. But
split them up.
Well, you know, it's just like honestly, I just don't know. As Andrew, I hadn't thought about Gallagher, but that would probably be a good one. I just like everyone that got put on that line, they didn't do great. And I know
Slavkovsky.
It'll be interesting to see where that player comes from. But if 5-on-5 goals is your point, like as Andrew just whispered to me, I mean Gallagher is probably your best bet for that. Overall, I'd like to see him be a little more confident in his shot. You know, his controlled entry is very, very good. He does a pretty darn good job supporting the defense. He doesn't always do a great job when he has to collapse. He'll often, you know, kind of mess up his zone coverage. But he's still very young, so he's an intelligent young man. And one of the coolest things with him is that he's all business. He just wants to improve. So, you know, there are things to improve in Suzuki's case. Like, his underlying numbers aren't great, but he's also played on some pretty bad teams, so we're gonna, you know, I take all last year's numbers, and
he's also played for the Western Conference champions. So
yeah, exactly. You know? He's done something else that the Leafs have never done. Yeah. There is go past the second round, and then also he won the Western. But you know, one of the cool things we saw just to get away from hockey, like on ice a little bit, is that we saw he started interacting with fans and stuff during the games, and he's getting a lot more open like that. So the more he gets comfortable in that aspect, not having to worry about that, I think that'll actually help him, you know, not worry about his on-ice play too, because he's actually a guy that when he gets into the zone, he's in the zone and he has a hard time kind of compartmentalizing. Wow, that was tough. I almost didn't get that one out. But so if he gets a little more comfortable with the whole social stuff, because I know it stressed him out. I know it really stressed him out. Like, we do videos, he's like, Mark, do I look stupid? I'm like, buddy, you could fart in the wind and people would be like, yeah, like, basically. Don't worry about it. But he does care about that stuff. So if he gets a little more comfortable there, then obviously I think
I think it helps with the Instagram account for his cat. Milo.
Yeah, Milo. Yeah, exactly.
One of the best Instagram accounts to follow. Just do it.
Yeah. Mm. No, I don't. Cat people are weird.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'm just gonna sign off now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, you know what's funny? Cat people are always like, look, the cat, and the cat's like biting them in the eye. They're like, oh, look, he's so adorable. Like, no, he's trying to kill you. He hates you with a passion. Okay. And they're like, oh no, look, it's just my cat, and the fucking thing's swinging and like biting, like, no, put it down. It's quite obviously rabid. Like, oh no, that's just my cat. He's a little murderer. Like, oh yeah, I had to get a freaking pirate patch because the freaking thing scratched my eye out 4 days in a row. But oh, he's just a little cutie, eh, Mr. Buttons?
Man, going,
cats are psychopaths.
Going back to Nick Suzuki.
No. Let's keep talking about cats. Or
well, I'm also a cat person, so I won't be, standing on your side here. I will be on Patrick's side. Anyways, I was just going to say that I was the only one who had Nick Suzuki at second, right? Yeah. I had Cole Caulfield at first. If you look at the panel, everyone else had Suzuki at first. And basically the reason behind my ranking was just that I'm just unsure if Nick Suzuki will reach, you know, the top end potential, if he will be a classic, you know, 1C. So
Suzuki is like a safe bet, and Caulfield has that high.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, Caulfield, I was saying that in the Caulfield podcast, that basically I think that if anyone's going to win, you know, a major award, it's probably going to be the Caulfield one. Probably, I'm not going to say probably because, you know, it's still a long bet, but... When Caulfield winning the Rocket Richard trophy for having scored the most in the league for one season. It's just Nick Suzuki, for me at least, he falls into this category of like really, really like a very good centerman who, kind of like Mika Zibanejad, has always been in the New York Rangers. If you put him with the right teammate, he can be like, he can lead you pretty far, I think. But will he by
does
himself?
Does he have that top end? Does he have another gear to find?
I mean, as soon as Artemi Panarin came into the New York Rangers, Mika Zibanejad kind of like lifted from being a really good second center. Like everyone was talking about, like New York Rangers need to find a 1C because they had Zibanejad as a 2C. And yeah. I think Suzuki kind of falls into that category as it is now. Like he put up 61 points last year. I mean, it's quite respectable for a 22-year-old, right?
Well, but, and on the 32nd, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. And with a, you know, half a season that was a wash with 8 victories in all. But it's just basically, I'm just wondering if he...
I tend to agree. I have that same concern whether or not he has a top-end talent. And listen, you're not going to get a guy, well, rarely a guy that has top-end talent. Where do you get picked? Like
13
or something? Or 13? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Just like very rare. I agree in that sense, but I think he's such a safe pick to be like a borderline elite that, you know, like...
But Caulfield, that's a... Like, no, I was going to say...
That, like we're saying, Caulfield might not end up being a great goal for sure. NHL guys. Like, that's the other... I mean, obviously...
The way he played... I was going to say, like, the way he played under Martin Saint-Louis for the, you know, second half of the season, he had a 49-goal, you know, per season pace.
And I'll be honest, I don't think... I'm not giving Saint-Louis credit for that. I think it's actually... getting rid of Sham that did that. Let's be perfect. Most of those amazing numbers under Saint-Louis was actually just a team like
kind of coming back up to normal.
Like normalization. I'll be really honest. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes this year. Because now if Caulfield gets off to a slow start, there's no excuses, right? Like, you know, they went and they got his guy as a coach. Essentially, they got him as an older man, you know, as his coach. So I don't worry about Suzuki. And I do think there is a... I think Suzuki won't go up much higher, but won't go down. And whereas Caulfield has that, you're right, potential to fly over Suzuki, but also significant potential to not come close to Suzuki.
Yeah, that's the question as well. Obviously, they traded for Kirby Doc now, which is, who is a different kind of centerman. But we still have to realize that, you know, he's just a couple of years, you know, from being a top three pick, whether you agreed with him being selected third overall or not. But, you know, basically, if you can have a 1-2 punch of those two young guys, that would be pretty good. And then maybe you don't need that, you know, that prime 1C like, you know, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews type. And that's the question. Like, basically, Kent Hughes and Jeff
Gordon you don't want to be like.
No, they're just putting the Vegas
and they had Chandler Stevenson as like their big center there, and he went down. They're like, oh, we lost him. Like, no, the issue here was that you had Chandler Stevenson as your number one center. Like, that was your problem. Yeah, because so injuries happen. You don't want Jake Evans. Like, I love Jake, he's a buddy of mine, but you don't want him as your number one C, right?
No, exactly.
So yeah, I think it'll be interesting also going back to that, because you're going to have a rotating cast and it kind of plays into it, because Suzuki's going to get the toughs this year. He's going to get the tough minutes, because I see Monahan more as a left winger at this point. Like, let's be honest, you look at that roster, I don't see him as a center. And then obviously Kirby Doc, you're going to have some playing with Duhuane. Like, there's actually an excess, I guess, of centers at this point. So I do think that Suzuki, because of this, because there's a bunch of question marks down the middle of the roster the whole way down, he's going to get tougher assignments. And I mean, yeah, he'll be able to adapt to it, but it's just simple facts, is the tougher your assignments, you know, harder it is to score. Now, the most important thing here is not quality of competition. It is important, but it's not the most. The quality of teammate is the most important thing in the NHL. So Caulfield, let's keep in mind, like, listen, we all love him, but he's still not a positive impact player in terms of underlying numbers. Like, he's still under 50% in a lot of these. Now, again, that's fine. So if you put the Chico, yeah, the more I think about Andrew's suggestion of putting Berkshire, putting himself on that line. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a sight for sore eyes.
No, that sight might give you sore eyes. Yeah. That's the thing. I honestly think that might be a really good, like, you know, also you have a veteran presence, a smart guy, a guy that can really get in there and get dirty. Like, one of the coolest things with Caulfield was when he's playing with Suzuki, is that towards the end of the year, Suzuki is such a good puck carrier that he generates space, right? And Caulfield was finding that open space. Now, I don't want to put up in the whole thing on Caulfield on Sham. Like, at the beginning of the year, he wasn't finding open space. And that was on him, man. Like, you know, that's his skill, is that, listen, you're smaller. And he always had that innate ability to go, an instinct to find open ice. And obviously playing the bottom six, you're not going to get many opportunities. That was dumb, let's be perfectly honest. That being said, I do think that if you can get someone else like Gallagher, yeah, that's really good. That he'll be able to create open ice. So will Nick Suzuki, and take a little bit of pressure off Nick Suzuki. But the it'll be tougher assignments this year. It's as simple as that. And that's what you want to see from your players. Like, I actually wouldn't be surprised if Caulfield had, or Suzuki had, you know, 55 points this year. Like, I don't know if he's going to go much over 60 in his career, and it's going to be another really tough year for the Canadians. So, I know
there's no Arturi Lehkonen there either.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know what? It's like, did you guys ever watch the movie Harry and the Hendersons? No, eh? Okay, well, there's that one point. I always ask that, and people are like, no, why would we ever do it? Anyways, John Lithgow is in it, so that's very important. At one point, it's basically, they have a Bigfoot living with them, and they have to, like, send him back in the forest, and they're like, you know, leave, we don't love you anymore. But, like, obviously they still love him. So that's how I feel, all that to say about Arturi Lehkonen. But again, he was, I'd say, maybe their best player last year. Like, it was finally, you know what I found hilarious? I'm gonna call it all of Montreal media again. Here I am going to making out friends. Y'all were insulting him on the press box, constantly yelling at Lehkonen, laughing at it.
They were not even present in the press box.
And then they would, like, make jokes, and they'd tweet about the jokes, like, oh, this guy just said this. Buddy. And then Lehkonen left, and like, oh man, he was so good. Like, so underappreciated. Because by you, exactly, by you guys who, man, oh, well, if Lehkonen scored in every shot, you know, he'd have, you'd have to pay him $15 million a year. You know what I mean? Like, anyways. So it goes to show him and Lars Eller, I think, were pretty good examples that you don't need superstars everywhere, which, again, yeah, we're talking about guys that are high-end now, but we're looking at T25 list, and there could be some similar guys. Like Owen Beck, do you know what number he was wearing at DevCam?
62.
And you know what? He looked a lot like Arturi Lehkonen.
We joked a little bit that it was Arturi Bekkonen.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, I like that. So, you know, you're going to have guys like that to alleviate some pressure, obviously. Yeah. And that was a good point, that no Lehkonen, no Toffoli,
Ben Chiarot.
I mean, that's a positive. Statistically speaking, that's a positive. No Lehkonen, well, no Kulak. No
Steve Yzerman doesn't agree.
Well, yeah, that's crazy to me, but whatever. These are guys, with the exception of Chiarot, like, that was the best deal any team has ever made. Like, wow, yeah, good job. Yeah, you. Like, I was with the Habs, and I was like, just about to be like laughing at the return there, but I'd be like, no, thanks, Ben. And yeah, good guy and all that, but yeah, that was such a good return. Anyways, that being said, you're losing all these guys that actually put up positive numbers. Like you look at Kulak, Toffoli, and guys that would do a better job at puck retrieval and launching the play up the ice, and that helped guys like Nick Suzuki. So that's why I'm saying maybe this year, you might see a point drop, even though he'll probably be a better player, a progression of a player. But the Habs put together an awful roster on defense. Like, Mike Matheson's the only one that's a positive impact player right now. know, and you might have two spots open and right now.
We have to know with Matheson as well that he had a really great year last year, but he's also had some pretty not so good years.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So he's the only positive guy right now projected. His numbers are based off last year with the Penguins.
Yes.
So, and then you have like, you know, you might even have a Norlander / Gooley / Harris like cycle. Actually, you know what? By the time this podcast comes out, they might have already acquired a player. Like the Habs, I guarantee you right now, they're going to get a defenseman. They will. They have to. Because right now, Corey Schoeneman, who, you know, it's funny because everyone and there's a bunch of guys in Montreal that what was the name of that guy in Columbus that they gave their Masterton vote to? They're a guy no one had ever heard of. Anyways, he was a Corey Schoeneman of the West. So I think we actually should give more acclaim to Corey Schoeneman. This guy went through his whole career, you know, and finally made it. But let's be honest, if he's your number five, you're not doing great. And you're going to have Savall. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say Denis for a reason. It's not going to be a good top four. And the bottom pairing, Schoeneman, maybe Norlander. I think Norlander actually, he hasn't looked great. I'll be honest, guys. You know, I'm a big Norlander booster, but he's got to start being consistent at all times. Like, put it together. You know,
you have Matheson and Edmondson, who are, you know, NHL proven.
Yeah, but Edmondson's a negative. Like, Edmondson, statistically speaking, I can honestly say it. He's a drag on his team, like a significant drag. All the top four, except for Matheson, again, which his numbers are big. So all that to get back to Suzuki is that if you have guys like Norlander, sure, good puck retrieval, that'll be great. But Suzuki, I think we'll have to spend a lot more time supporting his defense and giving, outlet options, which kind of limits his ability to drive the offense as well. So I think that weak defensive core. And I'm going to say right now, the Habs are going to beat their record. Last year, they set a franchise record for goals against. They're going to go way past it this year. Like, it's
we're going to draft Dalibor Dvorsky, as I call him, the conductor. Sure. Because
is he going to play this year?
No, but they're going to draft him next year because we want another Slovak player, obviously, on the team. And
the Piche, yeah, exactly.
And obviously, Dvorsky is actually a famous tenor, but we're not going to call him the opera singer, so he's a conductor.
Anyways, that works. But I mean, like, anyways, all this to say is that you need guys that can move the puck well to help offense, and that's why I'm kind of thinking, like, it might be a struggle for Caulfield and Suzuki this year just because there's really no one to relaunch that attack. Like, I know guys, everyone is crapping on Petrie. Petrie was Montreal's best defenseman by far last year, Like, not even close. Even under Schaum, his numbers were still, like, low 50s, everyone else was, like, you know, high 30s. He was low 50s, and then it went right up. So despite the fact that people are like, oh, he lost it, but yeah, he was a little gun-shy, I'll admit it. Like, and it sucks being away from your family and the COVID and all that. But Jeff Petrie and Brett Kulak were still by far the two best defensemen on the team last year. And Brett Kulak actually might be their best retrieval guy, if I remember correctly, looking at micro stats. That's going to hurt a lot, is losing those two. Who's going to launch the offense? Maybe guys like Justin Barron, but he's got good wingspan, but not quick retrieval speed. Norlander, that's why I keep penciling him in. I think that he would be actually like, he's got the speed to go get it. He just has to do a better job not putting himself in those rough positions where he gets rocked. But all this to say, offense starts in the defensive zone. I know it's so lame to say, but man, that's how it works. And if you don't have the guys that can launch the offense, guys like Suzuki will have a harder time. So don't be surprised if that's the case.
With Football World Cup coming up, they always spoke, and Cruyff always said it, and Cruyff was obviously one of the players to invent it. You need a very good right defender to start every build-up of the attack. And it's the same in hockey.
Yeah, absolutely. And Germany had a pretty good one, he was running their entire offense. But yeah, so also go Canada. Eh? How cool is that? That Canada's in the world. Well, actually, sorry. That the men finally caught up to what the women have been doing for a long time.
They won't catch up to the women.
No. Just making it. Like, congratulations, guys. You did what the women did many decades ago. Good job. You're not going to get into the top three as the women have. But no, it is pretty cool that we're getting, that kind of, Canada in the World Cup is honestly, I didn't think I'd see it in my lifetime. So like, that's pretty cool to me.
We've been listening once again at the final episode of Top 25 Under 25 for 2022. And as always, so we're already penciling in for the last episode next year, Marc Dumont for Montreal Hockey Now and Steve Dangle Podcast Network with Andrew Berkshire. You know,
Andrew's right there. He's actually about to go pick up his. Oh, he might have left already.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, so he's gonna go pick up his adorable children. So me and then me and Dylan are gonna play cars.
Yeah,
because that's what we do. We play cars. Yeah, and what can I say? Everyone's like, "Oh, you're so you're good with kids." And I'm like, yeah, like I get them. I get them. I get kids. They're on my level there. Yeah, exactly.
There's a reason I'm a teacher. You know.
Yeah, there's a reason I'm not a teacher because I would have lost my job pretty quickly. They actually, all my teachers said you'd be a great teacher. I'm like, and teach people like me? Like, no. Absolutely not. You guys, I'm looking at this. You guys have Caden Gooley at four? Yeah.
Yep.
No. Sean Farrell should be higher, man. All right. Lane Hudson should be in the top five.
Mm-hmm. There we have it. We have the professor, Mark Dumont.
Lane Hudson should be. I think he's their best defensive prospect by far, like miles away from everyone. Yeah.
We're going to leave you with that. And
No. We're going to leave it with Nick. We should end with Nick Suzuki, though, shouldn't we?
I'm going to leave with Nick.
Well, how many points do you guys think he'll crack 60 this year?
Yeah, I think he will have about 60, about where he was last year. Yeah.
Well, I was going to leave with Nick Suzuki's and Walt Whitman's "Oh, Captain, My Captain." But yeah, all right. We'll go your way instead, Mark, because I was trying to be the educated one.
That's a big hill to climb, my friend. I'm gonna say right now, Suzuki. I'm gonna like probably low 50s is my. And again, I'm just being realistic. I really think that the roster composition right now is. I mean Andrew, you know, he's better at this when it comes to data analysis. Mm-hmm. But he was saying maybe Chicago and Arizona might fit in under the Habs. Mm-hmm. I say maybe Arizona, but I really think the Canadiens will end up allowing more goals in franchise history than they ever have before, and they did that last year. So. That's not conducive to scoring points. And don't forget the shine, the whole Martin Saint-Louis shine is off. So I guess I'm being negative for no reason here. That being said, you know, when I was speaking to management with Nick Suzuki, is that, and management, not just from the Habs, and they're like, yeah, that's the kind of guy you build your foundation on. Yeah. It's the kind of guy you can be reliable, that will control a locker room. And now let's keep in mind, we talk about all this production. This guy absolutely takes it to another gear in the playoffs. Like it's undeniable that he Daniel Brière's his way through the playoffs. And I think, that's a rare ability. Now, whether it's an aberration or an outlier, that's happened, you know, in junior and then in the NHL several times. Like, don't forget, he's been in the playoffs twice. He led the Habs twice in scoring. But we know that Nick Suzuki can bring it to another level. And, you know, that's what you want in a leader. That's what you want, you know, to see on the ice. So, you know, once the Canadians are in better shape, and I do think that Hughes and Gordon are doing a pretty darn good job at it. I do think that you're going to see a guy like him become, you know, almost like if they make it far in the playoffs, he'll be a Conn Smythe type, you know, definitely. He'll be like, you know, locked as a Conn Smythe type player. And so, I regular season's all fine and good, but where Nick Suzuki really shines is when, you know, the game is on the line, like when things really matter. So we're not going to see that this year, but in the future, when you have guys like Slafkovský and Mishak in there, I think Nick Suzuki will be the ideal captain.
Oh, Captain. My captain, our fearful trip is done. The ship has weathered every rack. The prize we sought is won. The port is near, the bells I hear, the people all exulting, while follow eyes the steady keel, the vessel grim and daring.